Welcome back to another episode of The Lars Resort, which remains a podcast with me, Lars Heverton, still brought to you, as ever, by Betson. We have a new European champion. It is not England. It did not come home this time either. It remains absent. It's gone off to Spain. I guess we can all go visit it there. Spain have won the Euros, which I'm going to end up saying this a lot in this episode, which they really, really deserve. Let's just say that straight from the off. I struggle to think of an international tournament where you just overwhelmingly was like, yes, that was definitely the best team in this tournament, based on how they performed, based on who they had to beat to get there, based on everything. Spain were the best team in this tournament. They won this tournament. Let's talk a little bit about how that happened. My experience of this match day was, you know what, I just kind of decided to skip a lot of the build-up instead of, like, listening to all the radio and watching all the preamble on the television. I went to the driving range and hit some golf balls until pretty close to kickoff. And I was thinking, I was there, and I was thinking, am I being negligent here? Am I not doing my job? Should I maybe soak up more of the pre-match stuff? So I turned on a radio station just for a minute, and the first thing I heard, this was maybe 2 hours before kickoff, and the first thing I heard was like the presenter asking an ex-pro, he said, is this the day when Gareth Southgate takes the handbrake off? And I just turned off immediately. I was like, no, I can't deal with it. The England discourse, there's been so much of it, and God knows I've done my best to contribute to it. Listen, it's a tough gig doing hours and hours of content in the build-up to these things and trying to keep it interesting, but I decided to skip that and just have a really relaxed day and get into the mood for one last ride, one big final. And looking at the game, ahead of the game, it was always a case of all logic suggested that Spain were the better team. We had seen Spain play football in this tournament. We had also seen England play football in this tournament, and the sense was that Spain were probably quite a bit better at it. It was hard to escape that in the background. But as I said on the last episode, at least I think I said it, you know, there were just irrational things were happening with this England team. They didn't get knocked out at the stages where you kind of thought they would and when it looked like they would. Maybe some of that was the luck of the draw, yeah, but it seemed like irrational things might be in the air. So I told someone just before kickoff, you know, any head says Spain, but, you know, gut feeling, could there be an upset here? Maybe. And the first half, it was one of those final first halves that I feel they do happen a little bit too often. We're all very hyped for the occasion, but then not a ton of things happen in the first half. You know, Spain obviously had the ball a lot, but they didn't do an awful lot with it. Broadly speaking, I thought England did a pretty good job stopping Spain from being too scary in the way we've seen them be previously in the tournament. I also think Spain just kind of made a couple of little sort of not great decisions in the final third, and it didn't kind of get the last pass right, and a little bit sloppy from them. And England were pretty comfortable. You know, it wasn't... If you were hyped for England, like, you obviously didn't see them attack a bunch or create many things. And quality-wise, entertainment-wise, it was a pretty poor 45 minutes of football. But that happens, and I kind of thought England were kind of comfortable. They were kind of safe. They were going into halftime thinking, this is not bad. This is already, you know, one point in favor of irrationality, you know. Because while England managed to stop Spain from playing, then you can always, you know, there'll always be a moment. At some point, one of England's, you know, glittering attacking stars will have a moment. Or there'll be a set piece or something like this. But they were stopping Spain from doing the Spain things. They did that very well in the first half. And then in the start of the second half, that's absolutely not what happened. Just a disastrous start to the second half for England when Spain score a goal. Nico Williams suddenly has just a ton of space out on that flank. And Spain looked very good after the goal. I mean, we've seen throughout this tournament, you know, there's been a thing where England have been very criticized for always dropping back after they score a goal. But, you know, most teams have been doing that. I think, like I've said before, I think the players are all tired. Spain were not doing that. Spain has scored one goal. We're really in the ascendancy, created more chances. I write in my notes, England really lucky not to be 2-0 down here. I think I wrote I have it in front of me, in the 55th minute. And Nico Williams just kept finding space on the outside of Kyle Walker there. It's as if, again, I'm not a tactical analyst by any means, but it felt like Spain were much quicker at shifting the ball laterally on the field than England were able to adjust for, you know, because they had, you know, it's that thing that Guardiola talks about, how all team sports, all sort of ball sports are kind of about compressing, you know, drawing a lot of players to one side of the field and then moving the ball quickly to the other side of the field where there is then space and then exploiting that space. So much of like ball sports boil down to that one tactical move. And I guess that's what Spain were doing, because several times Nico Williams just had a bunch of space outside of Kyle Walker on that flank. And maybe that was the case of maybe Bukayo Saka could have come back and helped more, but I think it was also more about England just moving a little bit quicker and adjusting a little bit quicker. But Spain are so good at these sort of sharp passing moves, so that's a very easy thing for me to say from my sofa. Like, I don't want to be too harsh on them. Spain are incredibly good at this stuff, and England were under siege and really could have very easily conceded more goals. We had Watkins come on for Kane earlier than I think a lot of people would have expected. I mean, Southgate gets criticized for being indecisive in these moments. I think hooking your captain and an all-time top scorer after an hour in a final is a pretty, yeah, it's pretty ballsy. Not all coaches would do that. I'm looking at you, Roberto Martinez. You could go even further and argue that Kane shouldn't have started, but I guess that becomes a little bit tricky when he has scored goals in the tournament after all. But that feels like a bigger sort of England debrief type of thing. Either way, it wasn't a good game for Kane. He had only one touch in the box. He wasn't able to get involved with it at all. I've said this so many times now, you must be bored of hearing it. I do wonder at what point will, you know, the full extent of his physical situation in this tournament be made public. I think it's really weird that they haven't made public. You'd think, if you were in this situation, that you'd want people to know, actually, I'm playing half injured, rather than people just thinking you're really bad. But this is where we're at. Kane is clearly not at it physically in any way, shape, or form. But with a half-fit Kane, I guess you're hoping that his sort of instincts for goal will get you something. But if you can't get the ball into the box to begin with, then it's kind of pointless to have him up there. And of course, he starts dropping deep because he gets bored and he wants to get involved. All in all, the sort of pace and energy of Ollie Watkins, probably more useful in this sort of game scenario. And of course, coming off that great goal against the Dutch, you know, that there is a case to be made that Watkins should have started. But on the other hand, so much of international management in particular is about like putting your best players in a position where they might win you a game of football. And dropping your all-time top scorer for a final is, yeah, it's a big call. Anyway, we saw in the 63rd minute a great example of why you keep Jude Bellingham on anyway, because for a lot of the game he was having a tough time with it. Bellingham wasn't impacting things as he can. In the 63rd minute, I believe, he had just this great turn and a shot that was just wide, and you can see he can do special things, and these are the moments, if you're England, you're hoping you'll get them, and you're hoping the shots will go in and that you'll get something here. But immediately after, a couple of minutes after, you have this huge save from Pickford, from Lamine Yamal. Now, I'm not a huge Jordan Pickford guy, to be honest, but he does very rarely let England down, and he's made some good saves in this tournament, and this was an absolutely massive save from Yamal, and England's still pretty lucky not to be more than one goal down. Now, we eventually get, in the 70th minute, Cole Palmer coming on for Kobbie Mainoo, which I guess, again, I wrote here, Bellingham deeper, question mark, because like, that's what it means, that's how you make that work. And I immediately texted several people saying, I like this, because this has been my sort of, I've tried not to do too much backseat tacticking because it's tedious, but Cole Palmer, every time he's been on the field, you know, every single time he's come on the field for England in this tournament, he's looked so at ease, so comfortable, like he's unaffected by all the anxieties, he's kept the ball, he's technical. I think there is a case to be made now with the benefit of hindsight that he should have had more minutes in this tournament. But it is tricky. Like, who do you take off? Foden is obviously an incredible talent and very energetic in all of this. Bellingham is your main man in some ways, especially now that Kane is sort of Kane, a reduced Harry Kane, then Bellingham is the guy. Basically your biggest star, basically the reference point. So hooking him is a big move. And Bukayo Saka, of course, has proved his worth. He's also a very good player. So it's tricky to make this work. But he's only on for a couple of minutes, and Cole Palmer, you know, steps up and scores just a beautiful goal. And I've just been so impressed by how he comes on. And I know it's a meme and it's the Cole Palmer thing and anything, but he just looks mentally to be coping with these situations better than a lot of the other English players. I would argue he is the player who's looked the most like the player he is at club level when he's been playing for England, and like all the England stuff around it doesn't seem to affect him as much. Beautiful goal anyway. And England are right back in it. And like after that, like the crowd was up, you know, Jordan Pickford was doing the fist bumpy thing and getting everyone going. And England just kind of had a little bit of momentum there for a couple of minutes. And you thought, wow, oh my God, like maybe it's happening. Maybe it's finally coming home. But it just didn't last for very long. And England were criticized for sitting back yet again. I actually think I kind of want to go back and rewatch this part of the game again at some point. I'm not convinced they sat back because they decided to sit back. I just think they lost the ball. And the problem with losing the ball against Spain is that they will keep it for a good while because they know how to do that. And they will push you back. They will do the sort of build-up passing stuff that they do. And suddenly you're on the back foot and you're defending because Spain keep moving the ball around and you can't get near them because they're so good at that. I feel like that was what was happening more so than England going back into the bunker. I thought they really wanted to attack, like when the crowd was roaring and Pickford was waving his arms and all this. But Spain are very good. Spain are very good at what they do, and they reasserted themselves in the game. They kept the ball. I think Southgate actually mentioned something in the press conference about a throw-in where, you know, they were in a good place, but then they ended up sending it backwards and losing the ball, and they just didn't have the ball again for a couple of minutes because Spain did Spain things. And towards the end as well, Southgate said that he had four or five players that they kind of wanted to sub because of the physical condition they were in, which I think we always, again, need to bear in mind with trying to analyze the things in this tournament. Either way, Spain get the winner a couple of minutes from time. Great ball by Marco Correa, which is kind of sweet for him because he's someone who's been much dissed in England over the last year after just not having a great time at Chelsea. He's a little bit of a chaotic player. I think there's something about the players who have the big hair. If they're not playing well, it almost looks worse than if they have tidy hair. If Cucurella had like the tidy hair of Ben Chilwell or something, but he was an untidy player, I think it looks like there's more foolishness involved with the big hair. That's just a theory of mine. Anyway, he played well in this tournament for Spain and puts a good ball in, and Mikel Oyarzabal with the finish. It's excellent football, and it's yet again down England's right flank where they get the joy. Me having talked up Kyle Walker as being this sort of incredible machine in the last round, but I feel like it wasn't entirely his fault. I don't know. They always just seem to find space out there. Again, I wonder if it's to do with the sort of lateral shifts in positioning and stuff. At least that's where the trouble always seemed to be. And it's sort of a goal that's brilliant in its simplicity. You know, it's a sharp passing move where they kind of cut through England very quickly and leave it out wide for the galloping fullback who kind of plays it low in behind the defense. Also just kind of felt like a bit of a simple goal to concede. But there's something about the speed and precision which Spain can put these moves together, because they're so accurate with the passing. The technique is so clean. So when they start moving the ball like that, it's really challenging for opponents to adjust quickly enough. And then just eventually they managed to get it into the space and they did it. In England, they tried to rally. It was immediately after the goal, there was this great pass from Bellingham into Watkins into the box, which honestly one of the most incisive sort of forward passes an England player has played all tournament. And it did make me think, you know, again, I'm trying to avoid doing this because this is what everyone's doing right now, because England have so many exciting players. Like, should Southgate have played him? Should he have played him? I'm not going to do too much of that because, again, it's tedious. But I just saw that pass that Bellingham played in from like a pretty central position. Should he have been a little bit deeper? More minutes in this tournament? Get him on the ball a bit? Kobbie Mainoo, I think, deserves nothing but praise for the way he kind of stepped up when none of the other midfielders could hack it next to Rice. And nothing against him at all. He's going to have a great career. We all like him. But I do wonder, would it have been worth trying? Like, maybe instead of doing two games where you start trying Alexander-Arnold, maybe try Bellingham deeper in one of them in the group stage to sort of see how that works out. Because he can play the odd pass and you get him more involved. And yeah, I don't know. But of course, this is me doing the exact thing I said we weren't going to do. England do have one more huge chance. You have a save off the line from Dani Olmo. Sad times for England. And as you'd expect, towards the end of the game, we get a situation where the Spanish pain thresholds have been dramatically lowered. And some pretty incredible acting by some of the players. Like, I'm not sure how you would do this practically, but I do wish there was some sort of retrospective sort of punishment. There should be a committee that kind of goes through every game, Maybe that's ambitious. There were too many committee members. But someone should just go through the games, and every time a player is found to have like been grazed on the shoulder and they go down rolling around holding their face or something, just give an immediate 5-match ban. Like, I'm sorry, what are you doing? Just no ban for you, friendo. No football for a while. Maybe this is too much admin, but I would like to see it. I'm also very tempted, like, when you see Cucurella rolling around. You know, it's the shit housing. It's funny. It's all this, but it's also like, I wonder if you see this guy in a nightclub and you just kind of poke him on the shoulder, does he go wah and just roll around 4 times on the floor? Is that how his nervous system just works? Is that just a thing for him, or is it very specifically like right towards the end of a football game? Is that the police? I don't know if you can hear that. I think the detour is too big. We've taken too much of a sidetrack for what we're supposed to talking about. I'm ranting too much about nonsense. The police are getting involved. We better get back on subject here, I think. Listen, when it all comes down to it, again, Spain were the best team in the tournament by some margin. And I think the real big thing with them is that they've added just real pace and dynamism down the flanks in Williams and Yamal, but they've retained that incredible technical ability and the ability to keep the ball in midfield and move it around the way they do. And they also happen to have the best holding midfielder in the world, and Rodri just backing it all up there. It's formidable, and it's fair to say that it's worked. I mean, they've been tested. They had to get past Germany, they had to get past France, and they had to get past England, who, for all their flaws in the tournament, were second favorite with the bookmakers ahead and have a lot of good players. So Spain had to like take the toughest route to the final, and they really have looked like the best team throughout. I mean, forget, they also had to play Croatia, Italy, and a pretty feisty Albanian team in the group stage. They didn't have an easy group at all. They lost Pedri to injury. That's something they had to figure out. And they never even had to go to penalties. They won all their games. Just comprehensively the best team in the tournament. Absolutely no doubt about that. You'll remember, I did have that sort of slight inkling that I thought maybe England could do something, like irrationally. There was something deep inside me that thought maybe it's the time, in spite of everything. And there just were a couple of minutes there after that 1-1 goal when England were on the up. The crowd was roaring. Pickford was waving his arms around, you know. But they just couldn't capitalize on that momentum. And I should probably go back and watch it again, but I don't think it was a case of them just kind of going back into the Testudo formation. I think Spain just took the ball and kept the ball and moved it around and forced England to go back and defend. And there's just not a ton you can do about that. It's very difficult. You could say, oh, you could press more, but then again, you're late in a game after a long tournament. Everyone's tired. You try to sort of press, but you do it badly. They're just going to go right through you, and then you're in huge trouble. So, like, this stuff is hard. And Spain just really were the best team in this tournament, both in terms of what they could do collectively and in terms of having individuals who do things. I mean, Kate brought that up. Like, it wouldn't have been it's not exactly a big tactical brain move to have Lamal just bend it in from a million miles out. I mean, Spain also needed individuals to, like, do the things at the right moments in the way England did, but they were just a much more convincing team across the board. England were pretty bad for a lot of the tournament. Let's just be clear on that, because I like to think I'm not a Southgate apologist, but I am a Southgate nuancer. I don't like the way they're treating him over here at the moment. But we have, having said all that, England were pretty bad for a lot of this tournament. They relied on individual brilliance at key moments. But that can take you far in tournaments. It took England to the final. Portugal were pretty bad when they won it in 2016. I mean, Greece were really quite dreadful to watch, at least, in terms of how they played. I mean, they were just defending and doing very little in 2004. It's not like Argentina played amazing football all the time in Qatar. You know, you just sometimes in these tournaments, you have to get it done. England have some great players, but as we've said since before the tournament, there are also certain positions where they have a huge problem. They didn't have a left back for most of the tournament, and they could have called up, I don't know, like Tyrick Mitchell or Levi Colwill or something, but it's not as if that would have been like super convincing. And people, I hear pundits say, oh, we should play more like Spain. Why can't we play like Spain? You know what? You have no central midfielders who can pass the ball like what almost every midfielder in the Spanish squad can. It's just not a type of player England seem to be good at producing. And in international football, you can't just go out and buy them, which is what the English Premier League clubs are very good at. But you can't do that. You have to work with what you have. And you have the whole thing with your captain and all-time top scorer who isn't fit. You have Bellingham, who doesn't look like he's at 100% fitness either. So there's just a lot of stuff you have to figure out. And I just kind of think, in hindsight, getting them to the final, even with a fortunate draw, is not bad going by Southgate and his team there. In hindsight, we can all have like hypothetical solutions that we think in our minds would have worked. We can all have theories. And in my case, I would have liked to see more Cole Palmer. I would have liked to see Bellingham in a deeper role, at least experimented on in the group stage to see if that could work a little bit. But the whole point is all these things are just hypotheticals and we'll never know. And the reality is that England got to the final and they had a header cleared off the line that would have taken it into extra time. Just as they got to the final and lost on penalties at the last Euros. I just feel like the way this is the reaction here in the UK, watching social media and watching the post-match stuff on television. I mean, people are emotional. We don't always like use our brains when we're emotional, and people were hoping they would win and they didn't win, so they're upset. But I just think you'd do well to remember that this is a country that used to do things like lose to Iceland and not even qualify under Steve McLaren. That was the thing that happened. And at least now they were in their second final. You know, they haven't been in that many finals. They've been in two in a row now at the Euros. And we go, like, after the game, we go live to the Brains Trust in the BBC studio, who were kind of talking about the game and how one thing that was mentioned was that, so I'm doing it again. I'm trying to avoid this in the pod. It's just descending into me being annoyed at people who have said things I disagree with. We shouldn't do that too much. But, like, I was just very... this is one thing. I was so confused. Because we went to the BBC studio and they talked a little about oh, why are they not taking the shackles off? And why are they not playing? Like, after Spain scored, England attacked. Why aren't they playing like that from the beginning? They should be attacking more. To which I'm sorry, but I just have to wonder, like, did they watch the game, like, at all? Because, from an entertainment perspective, the first half was just bilge, obviously. But Spain didn't really create anything. And listen... just so this isn't just me being subjective and opinionated, let me just lean on some numbers here to back this up, right? In the first half, Spain, who, lest we forget, have beaten Italy, Croatia, Germany, and France to get there. They've been the best team in the tournament by a mile. They created almost nothing. They had five shots for a combined XG of 0.29. So like a third of a goal in the XG. So you know how that works. The chances they had put together, about a 30% chance of a goal. So England kept them pretty quiet. England also didn't create much. England had three shots for a combined XG of 0.17. But that's kind of close. 0.29 versus 0.17. Not a big difference. The XG balance here was marginally in favor of Spain, but it was a pretty even game. Now, what happened in the second half? This promised land of the second half, when England took the shackles off and showed the world what they can do. Well, Spain had 11 shots for a combined XG of 1.48, while England had 6 for a total XG of 0.37. Right? In terms of actually creating chances, Spain were massively and overwhelmingly on top in the second half. And England were so lucky not to concede more goals. And then we go live to the experts who say, oh, if only England played more like they did in the second half all the time, that would be better. I'm like, what? It's really weird. I'm sorry. I know this is like me doing the thing again, but it is weird, right? I'm not the only one thinking first half bad, but pretty even. Second half, England mostly get rinsed by Spain, but get away with it until they don't. And the conclusion is, oh, they were so much better in the second half. It's like, what are we talking about here? Very weird. And now, because conceding the goal, and this is just why it was such a disaster that they conceded a goal straight in the beginning of the second half. Because it puts England in a situation where they have to go forward more, but that leaves more spaces for Lamal and Williams to run into. And you see when Spain start moving the ball, they're so good at it. Moving the ball into areas where the space is very quickly, or just keeping it if they want to take this thing out of the game. It's so impressive. And this is why England were so compact in the first half. So Spain wouldn't do that. That really bugged me. And I don't want to repeat myself too much on air, because we did a lot of this in the last episode. There are definitely things you can and should criticize Gareth Southgate for. It's possible that he was too loyal to his big names, though I would argue that some of them did actually come through for him at various stages of the tournament. There's the midfield thing. There's the left back thing. But the idea that this England team, with the players they have right now, with the fitness levels of those players, that they obviously and automatically would have done better if they just attacked a bunch, I don't buy it. I really don't. And you know what? A big part of why I don't buy it is that we just watched them try to do that and just mostly get torn apart by Spain in that second half. And I get people are emotional and they're upset, but England, I looked at this. I just had to double check this because it's mad. From 1970 to 2016, England played in 9 World Cups and 8 Euros. Forgive me if I messed up some details here. I was just kind of looking at the websites to get the record. So as far as I can tell, England played in 9 World Cups and 8 Euros, 17 big tournaments that they were at. There were also 4 Euros and 3 World Cups they didn't even qualify for. But the 17 they were at between 1970 and up until, you know, 2016, just before Southgate takes over, how many finals do you think they got to? None. Zero. How many semi-finals did they get to? 2. That's 2 semi-finals in 17 attempts over a period of 46 years. And since then, they've been to 3 semi-finals and 2 finals in 4 tournaments. Now, that seems quite good. If this has been your level, historically speaking, 2 semi-finals in 46 years, and then you have 3 in 4 tournaments, I just think it's really weird that everyone's talking about how bad this is. I was like, oh no, this is such a disaster. Like, what? I just think Southgate and England just deserve a little bit more respect for actually managing to get some kind of result out of a challenging summer in which, by the way, quite a few teams struggled. Quite a few teams played badly this summer of the big nations. The England discourse, it's getting tedious. It's getting tiresome. I'll give the final word on this to Grace Robertson, Grace on Football at Twitter, who writes, I think England were legitimately pretty good in 2018 to 2022, but not so good here and blagged our way to the final. Southgate's done a good job on balance, but time for change. And I think that's totally fair. It seems to me him moving on now is the right thing, both for him and for the team. I just think a lot of people are quite disrespectful and appreciative of the job he's done. And frankly, a little bit delusional about easy it would be for the team to do better. I gotta say, I've enjoyed this tournament quite a lot. But the England discourse, not something I'm going to miss. I feel like it brings out the worst in me as well, actually. The whole thing is just quite toxic. No more talk of England now, until they appoint Graham Potter or something, and it all kicks off again. That'll be exciting. Now, let's finish on Spain instead, on the good thing, because they were the best team in the tournament from start to finish. One of the most emphatic tournament wins I think I can remember, just because of the route. I think this is like, when we talk about the draw, this is such a big factor for me in terms of how this win should be remembered. You know, ahead of the tournament, France and England were the favorites with the bookmakers. Germany were kind of third. My personal view was that Germany were stronger than England. Like, I'd stand by that. But anyway, Spain beat them all, is the point. They beat them by playing in a more varied way than they did before. There were some games where they dominated possession, like we know Spain can do, but against both Germany and Croatia, they actually had less possession than the opponents. And because they hit the wingers early and were happy to do that. They had just thrilling wingers in Yamal and Nico Williams, who were both just a delight to watch. They managed to find goals around the team, so it didn't really matter that Alvaro Morata did the Morata thing, by which I mean he worked really hard for the team, and he made runs and he pressed and all that, but he didn't score a lot of goals. But you got the goals from elsewhere. And De La Fuente deserves credit. He made a few big calls here. Like, what do you do when Pedri gets injured? I thought it was brave to just go, no, we're going Dani Olmo. He could have, you know, put Mikel Merino in or something like that to solidify that midfield a little bit. But he said, no, we're much more attacking playmaker type. We're going Dani Olmo. I thought that was cool. And it worked, more importantly. And international football is so different to club football. De La Fuente is not a big name from the club game, but he has worked with the youth teams in Spain, as we talked about. So he knows the players from that, a lot of them anyway. And he's used to working the way you work in international football, with sort of short and intense periods together, and then the tournaments and how that cycles all work, kind of shows you that the biggest name coach doesn't necessarily get you success. I mean, if you bought a pretty big football club and you had a bit of money and you were going to hire a coach tomorrow, you'd hire Spalletti to be your club coach. You'd hire Nagelsmann to be your club side coach before De La Fuente. But, you know, none of those dudes won the Euros. It's just a very different mode of football, I think. They were very clearly just worthy winners. And there's a part of me that would have liked to see Southgate and this England team in particular succeed. But, I mean, it's clear who deserved to get there in the end. Good point, I thought, from Miguel Delaney on Twitter. He writes, in conjunction with his piece from the game, that Spain are only the second team after Brazil 2002 to win 7 out of 7 games at an international tournament. So, to be fair, a convincing winner, you have to say. I think that in terms of footballing justice, the right team won the tournament. Now, I've had a good time with this tournament. I thought it was okay. a bit better than okay. I don't know. The format of the Euros has some issues. All the third place teams almost going through. It leads to a couple of like slightly defensive and duddish group stage games. I think that as much as we like underdogs, it is also a bit of a shame when like the big countries like Italy, France, England, Portugal all kind of play underwhelming football. That has a knock-on effect, I think, overall, when like four of the bigger dogs are all just kind of negative and not very impressive and not very good. The big positive surprises were Turkey, were Austria, were Georgia to an extent, I thought, who kind of livened things up. The Dutch had their moments. But, you know, it is hard to play good attacking football at international level. You know, at the highest level, good attacking football these days is all about like automatisms, as they call them in Germany, like the sort of drilled moves that you do every time and then you move into this space and he plays the ball there. Like getting that to work at international football is super difficult. Very few coaches can do it. Very few teams can do it. So I'm not saying I'm going to sit here in my sofa and say just attack more. Like it just isn't that simple. But I will permit myself to say I am hoping for a little bit more sort of attacking intent in the next big tournament. And hopefully Spain winning might influence the thinking there a little bit. If we're trying to find like a broader sort of macro idea here, if England, as much as I like Gareth Southgate like as a character, if England or France had won in this tournament, it would have been another tournament won by a team that's just kind of defensively solid and relying on individual moments. And every team, a team is successful doing that. I feel like there are more coaches out there and more football federations who look at it and go, yeah, I guess this is the way. It's better to have a team show that actually you can play good football and win tournaments. It is actually possible. It's not easy. It helps that you have crazy talented players like clearly Spain have, but you know, it can be done. And hopefully then in the next big tournament, we'll see more teams try to do that. That would be my sort of hope. The next big tournament, international level, is the World Cup 2026 in the US, Mexico and Canada. Hopefully the pod still exists then. That would be nice. And we can do something cool. I definitely think because we have such a strong link with Dallas in particular, through our friend Peter and a number of listeners who have come over from the kick around, the good P1s who have their own. Do you guys have your own corner of the resort, I wonder? Is there like an American corner of the resort where the P1s hang out? I don't think so. I met a few of you. You're pretty social guys. I reckon you'd integrate pretty well with the rest of the crowd here at the resort. Point is, there's like 9 games being hosted in Dallas. I feel like the resort should go on the road when we get to that point. That seems like a big possibility, but it's very far in the future. You can't really. I mean, I struggle to plan 2 months ahead. Never mind 2 years. So who knows? For the more immediate future, I mean, the pod will be back soon. It might take a little bit of a break, but you know, the Premier League preview stuff isn't that far away. There are transfers that are happening. There's the sort of ongoing restructuring of Man United. I may have some opinions on that. We'll get to that at some point. I'll see if I can do some interesting episodes over the summer. It's not going to be quiet on the feed until the start of the Premier League season. I can tell you that for sure. Thank you very much for listening over the tournament, all of you. And a pretty good amount of you have. I mean, that's very nice. I said before, I had my doubts over how viable it was to do quite so many episodes. Surely you will get tired of listening to me. That doesn't seem to have happened. And that's very nice and frankly a little bit flattering to me. I really do appreciate that. Thanks for all the positive messages. And I do, if you haven't replied, I'm sorry. It's been an intense month. I'll try to go round them up and see if I can reply to all of them eventually. It's a lot of positive feedback on the format. On this idea, I mean, this is a bad example because we're running long as heck, but the idea of just doing a pretty quick sort of reaction pod of the major storylines of what just happened seems to have jived with quite a few of you. So maybe that's something for me to think about ahead of the new season. Maybe some sort of slightly short sort of Sunday night update, what just happened type of weekly pod. Maybe that could be a thing, you know. I'm gonna give that some thought going into next season. It's been an absolute delight to hang out with you during the tournament. I am going to have a big nap now, and then I'm off to Norway tomorrow night to spend some time with the family and play some golf and maybe go fishing. You know, it should be good. Have some semblance of a holiday. I like it. The pod will return suddenly when you least expect it, or when you totally expect it. That's really hard for me to predict because I don't know what you're going to expect. Anyway, enough talking now, I think. Bye!